This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Oh, here we go. It's been a big day. This is the 19th of May, 2025, and day 18 of the trial of Karen Reed. And it certainly feels like it. Feels more like day 72.
I'm tired of it. How about you?
It feels like day 72 of the trial of Karen Reed, quite honestly.
It does.
I'm done. I'm just over it. I'm done with the negativity. I'm done with all of this ball of cultism that comes with this case, because a lot of cases don't have this with it. I'm just ready for people to be decent to each other once again, which may never happen, but you know, one can dream. But some very interesting testimony, and we're going to take a look at it. And you know, again, depending on what side you're on, you're going to go down one road or the other. We're going to take a look at the testimony here. This is Shannon Burgess, who is testifying, and he's the one who has lined up the data. Now, keep in mind, data, facts, those can be lined up by, you know, somebody who knows what they're doing with this. And it could be him. Anybody really who is familiar in this area could probably do it. Why it took 2.5 years, I don't really know the answer to that question. And I think that's a fair question to ask, no matter what side you're on. Why did it take 2.5 years for us to be able to match this shit up?
It's a good question.
Is it just because now we've gotten more of the Lexis data itself? I mean, they've always known there's been some inconsistency in this time. Why has it taken this long for us to get to this answer? And I don't know the answer to that. Honest to God, I don't. If you know the answer to it, put it in the comments of this video if you're watching us on YouTube. And if you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, do check us out on YouTube, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. And you can comment there or on X, Twitter, at Tony B Pod to weigh in on this. Because, look, I'm trying to look at this as objectively as I can. I think Karen's already sunk her boat with her own admissions. That's what's gotten me on Karen. Now, why the hell we get an expert witness on this stand that has pretty good testimony, has some very interesting information, has information that scientifically does seem to add up. So let's follow the science, not, oh, their LinkedIn profile isn't updated quite right, and they say this, and it might be that, and okay, yeah, a lot of people pad their LinkedIn profile. I don't think that's actually new information. Now, if you're going to be an expert witness on the stand, maybe they should have vetted that a little bit stronger. I'm going to say that. I think it's a little BS-y that we're like, this is the... Because, look, we don't have room for I's that are not dotted and T's that are not crossed in this case. So you better vet the shit of whoever you're putting on the stand. And if there's something that's going to come up that the defense can easily find about this person and go, what about this? No matter how bullshitty it might be, you don't have room for it.
No.
There's no room in this kitchen for the extra chef that has questionable credentials. He may be able to make the omelet just as lovely as everyone else. May make the best omelet in the room. But if he got in the job saying he was qualified because he went to Le Cordon Bleu Culinary School and then worked under Thomas Keller, and it turns out he worked at Applebee's and made the delicious boneless chicken wings, because they are delicious, it's a little different. Does it? At the end of the day, when we're talking about the data itself that is being dissected here, that he fibbed over there a bit or didn't update his profile, depending on how you look at it? Because I don't know all the details of this yet, honestly, as we're recording this. If I can say it's a fib, if it's a lie, if it's stole data on a LinkedIn profile, I cannot answer that accurately. So before you try to crucify me in the comments, I'm just telling you where I'm at in terms of taking this data in for the day. But I can tell you this, the data on the vehicle, it is what it is. The messenger of the information, that's another thing. On as far as the prosecution goes, why the fuck couldn't you find somebody better that doesn't have questionable credentials? If this data is like the same no matter what, this is your guy. This is your only job. Present this piece as solid as it can. And you know they're going to poke holes at anything. But at the end of the day, if all they're poking holes at is a LinkedIn profile that hasn't been updated in years, well, then I guess we're all in the same playing field, because guess what? Karen's hasn't been updated. Alan Jackson.
Yours still, hasn't been updated.
Yeah, mine hasn't been updated forever. Alan Jackson says he's still running for like LA assistant DA in 2012. So there is a thing where people just don't update their LinkedIn profile very well. It doesn't change the actual facts of the data, which we're about to take a look at. And this is some very interesting testimony from today in the trial of Karen Reed.
What Let's is take this, a look. Mr. Burgess.
Sure. So this is the next time that the vehicle is powered on and subsequently powered off. That power on event occurs at 12:35:01. The power off event occurs at 2:12:01. And then this video is a video from alarm.com surveillance that depicts the vehicle pulling into a driveway and shutting off. So when we look at the video and we watch the video, you can actually see at 2:12:01 in the video timestamp that the windshield wiper stopped moving and the vehicle's suspension begins to lower, indicating that the ignition button has been pressed.
Let's start with the power on event. Was there any video available to show the power on event at 12:35:01?
There is no video available that I'm aware of.
On the last slide, you had the power off event at 5:46:20 a.m.
Correct.
Was there any other power on, power off events between 5:46:20 a.m. and this event here?
No, there was not.
Did you try to obtain any collateral or cooperative video or evidence relative to the power on event of 12:35:01?
I did request or make a request to see if there was any video available, and as far as I'm aware, there was not.
Regarding the power on event, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the accuracy of the power on event as it relates to the Lexus clock on the system?
Yes, I do.
And what is that opinion?
That is that power on event is accurate to the second in reference to the Lexus clock.
12:35:01 p.m.?
Correct.
And do you have an opinion as to the power off event to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the accuracy from the data you recovered from the SD card?
Yes, I do. And that power off event, again, occurred at approximately 2:12:01, according to the Lexus clock.
I don't know if you can enlarge the video, Ms. Gilman, but if you can, and if not, could we play anyways?
God damn, look how much snow there was.
Yeah, it was a ton.
You can't even see the road.
Mm-mm. Oh, that's 2 feet of snow. Like, when they open the driver's side door,
it looks like... You're pushing snow out of the way, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't been in a snowstorm like that in years.
Yeah.
And I'm in the Midwest.
That's a big one.
Yep.
Well, it was a nor'easter, and as the meteorologist said, it was like one of the most significant in forever.
Thank you. And could you explain for us the graph on the bottom of that exhibit?
Sure.
Pardon me, of that diagram.
Sure. So that graph, again, is just a timeline, a graphical representation of when that power off event occurred, and when the power on event occurred and when the power off event occurred at 12:35:01 and 2:12:01.
Based on the data you analyzed from the SD card, was there any further power on and power off events on January 29, 2022 after this 12:35:01 to 2:12:01 event?
Yes, there was.
Could you display for us page 35, Ms. Gilman? And what is this, Mr. Burgess?
Sure. So this is the next power on event that is recorded within the system. And that power on event occurs approximately 4:11:46, and the power off event occurs at 4:12:56. The video we see is that same alarm.com surveillance video. The start timestamp of that video is 4:12:03. So again, we don't see the actual power on and off event within the video, but it is consistent with what we would expect as the power on event occurring at 4:11:46. And then the video starting, and we see the car backing up at 4:12:03.
Would the alarm.com be using a different clock than that of the Lexus?
It would be, yes.
And based on your methodology and vetting and testing in view of the data on the SD card, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the time of this power on event?
Yes, so that power on event would be 4:11:46.
And do you have an opinion as to the time of the power off event related to this diagram?
Yes, that would be 4:12:56.
Is that opinion as well to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Yes, it is.
Is that a photograph or a video?
That is also a video.
Ms. Gillen, could you help us?
So for those of you playing along on the podcast versus the video, we're seeing video right now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And similarly, does the graph give a general idea of the time?
Yes. So similarly, the graph is a timeline representation of the power on and power off event.
Mr. Burgess, was there an additional power on, power off event after the power off event at 4:12:56 p.m. at the Dighton residence?
Yes, there was.
Ms. Gilman, could you show us number 36, please? Mr. Burgess, could you take us through this one?
Sure. So this is the next power off or power on event that occurs. And that power on event occurs at 5:34:51 p.m. The power off event occurs at 5:36:42. Again, the video that is associated with this does not show the power on or the power off event, but it shows the time just before the vehicle is arriving to this location on a tow truck. And that would be consistent with the vehicle then being powered off and backed off of the tow truck at that time.
And based on your analysis of the data, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty what time this power on event took place?
Yes, and that time would be 5:34:51.
And that's according to the internal Lexus clock?
Yes, it is.
Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty when this vehicle was then powered off?
Yes, and that would be 5:36:42.
Again, pursuant to the Lexus clock.
Correct.
After this event at 5:34:51 p.m. to 5:36:42 p.m., when you studied the data, were there any other power on or power off events for this Lexus vehicle on January 29, 2022?
Not that I studied after this event.
Could you take that down, please? Now, we touched on an issue earlier. I want you to give your opinions and explain to the jury. You mentioned the word variance between different items. I don't think you used the word items. You said something else.
Sure. So that's going to be the clock variance between different devices. So in this instance, what we're referring to is the difference in the clocks of the Lexus module and an iPhone. So we would not expect those clocks to be perfectly synced. Typically what we see and is what is generally accepted is a clock variance of up to 60 seconds. And that is because when you think about when you're looking at your radio and you're looking at the clock, it's representing to you the hours and the minutes. It's not representing the seconds. So again, it's accurate. You know, its function is to be accurate to the minute, but its function is not to be accurate to the second.
I'll give an example of this here quick too, because I thought of this today, actually when I was waking up, because half the time I'm dreaming about this fucking case. And I'm like, oh, that's a good point to make at 3 a.m. Here's the point I'm going to make. I set two alarms in the morning. My, and there's one in this room, so I have to say quietly, Alexa. That.
Yep.
And the Siri. I have that too. So the phone and the Amazon device. And I set them both for the same time. And you know what? They're both off by about, 27 seconds or so. I'd say in
easily.
Usually 30-ish area, I think, to be safe. But they both will go off relatively close. So which one is the right time?
Well, they're not synced up to the atomic time. And if they were, they should be identical within the millisecond.
And that's the thing. Once you can do that with this case, which they appear to have been able to do, that's how you figure out where this all lines up. Now, the thing is we've already known there's been a vehicle strike on the car for quite some time.
Right.
The fact that there's even a vehicle strike on the car should be pretty damning in itself that it's anywhere remotely near this time. But the fact that we can align the times correctly, which, yes, can be done, and it doesn't matter what's on his LinkedIn profile. I know you want to go back to the LinkedIn profile. Not you, but people want to go back to the LinkedIn profile. Well, what about it? Yeah. Let's just tamper that down for a moment. You can do this, and you can do it with somebody who doesn't have a LinkedIn profile that's beefed up either. And if you figure that out and you have the data to do it, it is what it is. It doesn't matter who does it. And it tends to show the same thing. It shows Karen, vehicle strike, and his phone going dead. I mean, not dead, but no longer active.
And that's concerning.
It's not concerning. It pretty much shows that his phone stopped working precisely the same time the car hit something. And it's his phone, so it's on his body. And then it stops working. What do you think happened? I don't know. What could possibly that be? I know the first thing I would think of is that a whole house of people and a dog and many different agencies and 50-some people on the outside who know nothing about this case all conspire to put their lives, reputations, futures on the line to frame Karen Reed. That seems logical. And then this guy who's named himself after a reptile starts going off on this online in an insane manner and insulting people left and right and harassing them and ruining people's lives and saying horrible, horrible things. And now he's up on all these different felony counts. I won't be putting my eggs in that basket, but apparently a lot of people have, thinking, oh, he's an Avenger. Yeah, we're not in Marvel, kids. And he's no fucking Avenger. But somehow that's the world that we live in right now. So we welcome you back to the sane side. If you've been over there for a little while, it's okay. We can tamper you off the Kool-Aid a little bit. We got Sharkleberry Finn over here. It's good. It's not laced with anything. And you should be good. But yeah, that's there's facts and there's not facts. And there's facts and there's distraction. So
I've got a little bit of an issue with
Jimmy.
Not so much the guy who's on the stand, but the person who found him and went, this is the one we need. And that's, you were talking about that before we went into this.
Well, I think the problem with this is, honestly, is it's not that he's the one that we need. He's the one that was there. He was the one that was doing this. He was the one that was doing the data. So he's like the one that was in that role by default. Now, I think at the end of the day, we probably should have found someone who knew when it was time to give up the hair thing and just start shaving it off and not do this little weird thing at the front. Like, dude, come on, just give it up. You're going to be better bald. You'll be much more respected. You don't have to look like George Costanza or really even sadder George Costanza. But Tony. Also, let's not pad the resume either, because people will probably figure that out, especially if you're in a murder case.
Well, and this is not going to end well for this guy. This is not good for your future prospects if you want to move up in your field to pad your resume. And no. It's not just LinkedIn. The guy seemed to have fabricated his education. Yeah. People don't look kindly upon that.
That's not a good thing at all.
No.
But I'm also saying, though, too, if someone else were to, if another peer, which they did, there's peers that do review the data. It's not just this guy going, here you go.
Right.
Here's what I got.
He was the monkey who sat down and did the math.
Yeah. So the peer-reviewed data shows the same thing regardless. So, yeah, I hear your arguments. I think this is bullshit. I think it's insane that you put this guy in the stand and said, oh, yeah. he's got, like, look, he may be insecure and padded his resume, but it doesn't change the data. And at the end of the day, that's really what matters. Notice, you know, Alan Jackson or nobody questions, unless he didn't question anything about the data at all. I mean, when we get to that, we're not even going to play the whole damn thing, but you can listen to the whole thing on our podcast channel. But they don't question any, it just goes after him specifically. And I get it. You're going to want to go after the guy who's delivering the damning data. And unfortunately,
it's a character assassination.
And unfortunately, the guy's
character found something.
And unfortunately, the guy's characters isn't the strongest.
No.
But at the end of the day, the data is the data. When you actually go back to the damn data, it's the damn data. And that sucks for Karen. So we have to take kind of emotions out of this a bit and go, okay, but does any of this really affect the data over here? Is anything that we're arguing over here truly affecting anything over here? And it's not.
Well, and I was, before we went into this, I was going to read text between you and I before we got going.
Yeah.
You know, I said, Karen Reed trial is interesting today. They're destroying this Shannon Burgess. And you said, but does it change the evidence? And I'm like, well, no, but no.
Because I know
it,
you,
Tony.
I know you, and you're getting into the emotional side of it. And I'm like, Stacey,
Damn it.
Yeah.
I even said that. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Exactly. So
shut
there's
up.
That. Yeah.
You're right. I hate it when you're right. I freaking hate it when you're right. You're right. But on that same note, it's important when you put yourself up as an expert witness or somebody hires you to be an expert witness that you are an expert. And by today's standards, to be an expert means to have the credentials, the certificate on the wall with the $200 framed thing that says where you graduated from, you know, and signs that you wore the cap and gown.
Yep.
You got the piece of paper.
It matters.
He doesn't have the piece of paper.
It matters in our society today. And it does. It does matter. So why this was our choice, I don't know. I mean, there's probably some reasoning here behind this, but they had to have known going in, like, this is a, I don't know how you would unless you're being really freaking ignorant, but my God, I would think you'd have looked at his credentials and gone, this would be a weak point here, because this doesn't appear to be completely accurate. But again, we are talking about a LinkedIn profile.
I think there was something to do also. He doesn't have a bachelor's degree yet. He said on his LinkedIn profile that he got his bachelor's like 2016 to 2018.
Okay.
When he was working on it and still didn't get it. So
okay.
I don't think he's officially got it yet.
So it looks shady. I 1000% agree. I don't like that at all. I think that's stupid. Why are you presenting with somebody like this? Is this your only guy that can do this? At the end of the day, though, let's be grown-ups and pull our emotions out of this and like, well, I want it to be this way. I want it to be that. We all want it to be one way or the other, whatever. I want it to just be the truth.
Yeah.
And look, data can come from many places, even if it comes from somebody who has represented themselves differently. But if the data itself is what it is, yeah, please double check it. Please triple check it and make sure this guy is not full of shit. But data is data usually. And the answers that he's providing are not answers that he like. It's not an opinion that he's providing. He's providing flat out data. And there's a difference between
opinion
and data.
He's also providing his interpretation, though, of the data. So
but he's not. I mean, he's... You could ask anyone of their interpretation of the data, going, okay, the phone stops here. This is what the data shows. The strike happens here. This is what the data shows. What do you think happened? I don't even care what the hell he thinks happened. It doesn't matter.
Could have dropped it in a toilet.
Let's ask it. Well, they weren't near a toilet. So, no, that's not really a logical option. So what happened? Well, a vehicle strike occurred. John happened to be right there at that time. His phone's there. He's found dead in the snow. Let's take a wild guess what happened.
Yeah.
Because
I get your point.
Why is that? That seems to be insanely logical as compared to 50-some people conspired against Karen Reed in the middle of the night during a nor'easter that don't know each other and are willing to put all of their credentials, life, freedom, everything on the line to frame Karen Reed. No, yeah. I'm sorry, that's not realistic. It's just not. And again, was there things in this investigation that sucked? Abso-fucking-lutely. But your story about the mysterious man that said, look at people in the house, and then you went down that road and you didn't look back, that's on you, Karen. That's on you and your defense team that thought that was the road to travel, because it's not the road to your freedom. That's a road that's going to get your ass locked up for a very long time. Because you know damn well something happened, whether you remember it well or not. Sorry, the evidence points to it. Your own consciousness of guilt points to it. It is what it is. I'm sorry.
The car knows.
It sucks. I believe you didn't want to do it. I think you should probably be a free woman, honestly. But you need some help. Because this is insane. And the damage that you've done after this, that's where I'm like more, yeah, lock her ass up. Because you've fucked with so many people's lives because you couldn't take accountability for your own shit. Mm-mm. If you were just like, and no one was being affected other than the court system and wasting their time, you've affected so many damn people's lives. Your inability to take accountability for what 99.9% likely happened here. That's the shit where you should go to jail for.
Yeah.
Now, we're not on trial for that right now. Now, are we? But that could very easily be another trial. I don't think this story is done anytime soon. Let's watch a little bit more of this.
Is a variance between different devices an accepted concept in your community?
Yes, it is an accepted concept in my community.
When you were looking for power on, power off information from the data on the SD card, what clock would that information, that time, be dependent on?
Sure. So that's going to be dependent on the Lexus clock. That Lexus clock is continuously running, but it also syncs up with GPS systems to update the clock on occasion. We do not know how frequent that activity occurs because that is, you know, proprietary to the manufacturer themselves.
To bring us back, when you started this case, there were two important tech stream events?
Correct. There were two tech stream events.
Remind us what those were?
Sure. So one is going to be associated with a three-point turn, and the other is going to be associated with a backing maneuver.
In those two tech stream events, are they related in any way to the running clock that is on the tech stream data?
Sure. So when we think back, the tech stream events have that running clock from ignition on. And because we know the power on events from the infotainment module, we can reconcile when those time counts occurred.
If there's information about timing from tech stream data on the Lexus, what would you have to do if you took a separate device like an iPhone and you wanted to reconcile the variance?
Sure. So if we want to reconcile the variance, what we would need is we would need an event that occurs that both clocks record. So, for instance, if you've got two cameras that are recording you jumping up and down, you would take your motion of jumping up and down or your event of jumping up and down, and you would use that event to sync the clocks of those two cameras. So essentially, we're doing the same thing with the Lexus clock and the iPhone clock.
When you did your analysis during this case, initially, did you have any interest in trying to reconcile those clocks?
No, I did not.
Why not?
Because that is generally accepted that the clock variance is up to 60 seconds. And while reviewing the power on and off events and comparing that to the surveillance videos that were provided, that was consistent with what we would have expected.
Did something compel you to further your study and compare the Lexus clock information on those two text stream events, the three-point turn and the backing maneuver, to a different device?
Yes, there was a claim of attempting to synchronize those two clocks that I believe was potentially misleading.
So based on reviewing that information and coming to that conclusion, did you on your own do any further study about the difference in clocks and attempt to synchronize them?
Yes, I did.
You said that you can synchronize if you have more than one device identifying a particular time. What did you mean by that?
Sure. So if we've got two devices that are recording a similar event, so let's say, for instance, a three-point turn, if that is recorded with an iPhone, with the iPhone's clock, we can compare that event to the time that that event occurs and is recorded by the Lexus.
Were you aware of any device other than the Lexus recording that three-point turn?
Yes, I was.
What were you aware of?
That would be an iPhone from Mr. O'Keefe.
Did you have data and information from Mr. O'Keefe's phone some time ago?
I did have partial location data from Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone.
Did you do something with his iPhone data as it relates to the Lexus clock on those two events, the three-point turn and the backing maneuver?
I did on the three-point turn, yes, and the backing maneuver.
Tell us what you did.
Sure. So I looked at when the three-point turn occurred within the iPhone data and the location data in reference to that clock, and then looked at the same three-point turn event as it was recorded from the text stream and the Lexus clock.
At some point, did you have enough data to make that full analysis?
Yes, I did.
Now, as a general concept, before we get to the three-point turn in detail, I want to turn to page 39 of your PowerPoint. I'm sorry, if you could turn to page 38, please. Okay. Can you explain to us the concept of synchronizing clocks?
Sure. So this is kind of a graphical representation of how to synchronize a clock. So essentially, like I said, we're taking a event that occurs. In this instance, it's a three-point turn. We have data that where that three-point turn is recorded within an iPhone, and we have data where that three-point turn is recorded within the Lexus. Those events are have clocks associated with them. So in order to reconcile the difference in those clocks, we are comparing the clock times for the event from each device and moving or adjusting the clock for one compared to the other.
In addition to specializing in data and computers and cars, you also mentioned that you specialize in mobile phones.
Yes, I do.
Did you use your experience in your training and your education to analyze the iPhone data from Mr. O'Keefe's phone as it related to the information from the Lexus vehicle?
Objection, Your Honor.
Can you answer that question, Mom?
Yes. Yes.
You did?
I did.
Okay. Did you see what type of information was being stored on Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone as far as location data?
Objection, Your Honor.
I don't know that.
Yes, I did. In reference to location data, Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone is recording timestamps, GPS position, speed, and heading. So heading is going to be the direction that the iPhone is facing.
Was there any particular application that you were aware of that he was using?
Yes. As far as I'm aware, he was using the Waze app for navigation.
We have number 39, please. Could you tell us what this shows, Mr. Burgess?
Sure. So specifically what we're looking at within the location data is a two-minute window. So that two-minute window we see here graphically plotted on a map, and we see, it's hard to tell, but you can see a white dot, which is the center of a radius for a GPS position. The orange circles are the horizontal accuracy for each one of those positions. And then down here, you can see a black line that is coming off of each GPS position that represents the heading or the direction that the iPhone is facing.
You mentioned you had some materials from Mr. Whiffen. Did you ever see any materials from Mr. Whiffen regarding location data that was acquired through the application Waze?
Yes, I did see a report by Mr. Whiffen.
Did you rely on his report, or did you independently, on your own, test the location information?
Sure. So I independently, on my own, looked at the location data from Mr. O'Keefe's phone.
This diagram that we see with all the points on it, is this developed from your own independent view and review of Mr. O'Keefe's location data?
It is.
To the top left is a round circle. What does that indicate?
Sure. So top left. So, yeah. So that's going to be, again, the GPS coordinate beginning for this two-minute interval that we're looking at. The orange circle is going to be the horizontal accuracy for that GPS point.
And then bring us down and up to the left. There seems to be a bigger circle on the top.
Sure. So as we come down, believe what is Cedar Crest, and go up Cedar Crest, we have a position where the course heading of the iPhone changes, the speed lowers, and we have a lot more GPS points in a centralized location. So that's why you see that overlapping circles in that location.
When you're following and analyzing Mr. O'Keefe's location information, does this in any way relate to the first of those two text stream events that you originally were focused on?
It does relate to the first text stream event, which identifies a three-point turn.
And again, although you're not an accident reconstructionist, do you know if there's data that was captured regarding this three-point turn as far as an event?
Yes, I'm aware of data that was captured during that three-point turn event.
If we could turn to page 40, please. I want you to explain to us how this chart works. What does a point mean?
Sure. So when we were initially provided the location data, again, we were provided a partial view or a partial data set of that location data. And within that Excel spreadsheet that data was provided in, it was identified as GPS points. So what we've got here is we've got the partial data along with the full data set that I was provided later on. So we've got a couple columns here. So we've got point, which is GPS point from that partial initial data set that I was provided. We've got timestamps. So these timestamps are every second. With every second, there is a latitude and a longitude recorded, as well as a horizontal accuracy, a speed, and again, a course heading.
When you looked at data point 154, is there a time ascribed to that?
There is a time described to that as 12:23:58.
Before you did this more in-depth analysis, were you relying on anything beyond point 154, that one line?
No. So that was the only thing that was being relied on at that time.
Why?
Because, again, we were initially provided a partial data set of the location.
And why didn't you seek earlier on to break this down with more specificity?
Again, because the generally accepted clock variance is of up to 60 seconds, and that data was consistent with everything else we were seeing, so there was no need to look any further.
And what compelled you again to look further?
A claim of misinterpreting and a misleading calculation trying to adjust these clocks.
Were you given a report?
I was not given a report. I was giving a PowerPoint presentation.
When you decided to delve deeper into this, was that on your own initiative or were you requested to do it?
That was on my own initiative.
Now, rather than simply relying on point 154, what does breaking it down with all of the times and numbers between the green and orange do for your analysis?
Sure. So breaking it down, we can see between the green. So the green highlighted in green is position or timestamp 12:23:59. What we see happening before that time is the speed is pretty consistent between 15 and 8 miles per hour. The speed starts to drop at that point. And if we look at the course heading, we can see that the course heading before that time is pretty consistent as well, between 339 and 348. So that is, you know, at position or at time 12:23:59, the speed drops and the course heading changes from, you know, approximately 360, so straight north, to 284, which is in a northwesterly direction. After that time of 12:23:59, the speed recorded is zero. The course heading is 352. And at time 12:24:07, you see the speed pick back up, and the course heading is around 179 degrees. So it's going to be in a southern direction. So based on this information, we can tell that the vehicle between 12:23:59 and 12:24:07 made a three-point turn maneuver, changing from the northern direction of heading to the southern direction.
Is this data generated from Mr. O'Keefe's phone or from the Lexus?
Sure. So this data is generated from Mr. O'Keefe's phone.
Where you initially relied on 154 as a timestamp to identify the time and location of the car at a later point, does this give you more of a benefit breaking it down?
This does give you more of a benefit breaking it down.
The zeros and the speed, what does that indicate to you as far as the data relative to the portion of the three-point turn?
Sure. So it doesn't necessarily mean the vehicle is at 0 miles per hour. Again, if you look at the horizontal accuracies, we've got anywhere between 16 and 29 feet. So that's the range in the GPS and what it's seeing. So if the car is, you know, slightly moving or moving like you would expect during a three-point turn, you would expect to see that speed at, you know, 0 miles per hour.
Did you develop a photograph with some detail to explain this in more of a picture format?
Yes, I did make a graphical representation of this.
If we could have 41, please. Could you break this down for us, Mr. Burgess?
Sure. So this is, again, a zoomed-in version of the map that we showed earlier. And what we've done is we've cleaned out or just removed, for the sake of simplicity, the other points leading north to this point and the points leading south. Those are going to be those 0 mile per hour indications. So what we're looking at is the heading change and that speed change, which occurs at 12:23:59. And you can see the heading change from the black arrow leading off of the center radius of the GPS position. And then at 12:24:07, you see the heading change to a southern direction, and then the other GPS points are consistent with the vehicle moving southbound on Cedar Crest.
So the claim that you analyzed, did that actually compel you to analyze and identify a more accurate variance than you originally had?
It did.
And do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty what the variance is between the clock on the defendant's Lexus on January 29, 2022 and Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone on January 29, 2022?
Yes, I do.
And to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, what is that variance?
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained. Need a little more, Mr. Brain.
Okay. After you studied timestamp 154, what did that help you do? What did you learn from that?
Sure. So after studying timestamp one or GPS point 154 and these further GPS positions, we're able to identify the approximate, you know, time that the 3-point turn occurred according to Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone data. So now we've got that event of when that 3-point turn occurred. Now we can compare that to the 3-point turn from the text stream data and that running clock. Again, what we're doing is taking the power on event at 12:12:36 and adding the time count from the text stream data to come up with the time of 12:23:38 in the text stream data. So the text stream data indicates a 3-point turn ended or a trigger event, a text stream event ended at approximately 12:23:38. The iPhone indicates that a 3-point turn occurred between 12:23:59 and 12:24:07. So since we've got that shared event between the two devices, we can reconcile any type of clock variance. So adjusting the Lexus clock to the iPhone clock, we can calculate that clock variance.
Is this a methodology that is commonly used in your practice?
It is.
Is it commonly used in the scientific community which you're part of?
It is.
Are there scholarly papers about this type of methodology in comparison of synchronizing clocks?
There are.
One of the papers you wrote, did that have anything to do with synchronization of clocks?
It did not have anything to do with synchronization of clocks. But it was relative to how accurate the timestamps are of events from iPhones.
And that was one of your peer-reviewed papers?
Yes, it was.
And are there scholarly journals and studies on the synchronization of clocks?
There are, yes.
Did you use that methodology in your analysis to come to arrive at an opinion about the time variance between the defendant's Lexus and Mr. O'Keefe's phone?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Yes, I do.
And what is that opinion?
The clock variance is between 21 and 29 seconds.
If we could have number 42, please.
21 and 29 seconds. Well, that's pretty big.
Sure. So this is, if we think back to the last
slide. Like small but big news.
We've identified right. The 3-point turn event in both the data sets. So now if we want to adjust one clock to the other, we can do that. And doing that, we've identified that the variance is between 21 and 29 seconds. So we would need to adjust the Lexus clock forward by 21 to 29 seconds to synchronize it with the iPhone data. So in doing that, the end of text stream event 11:62:1 goes from 12:23:38 to 12:23 between 12:23:59 and 12:24:07.
These two clocks, one on the left being the Lexus clock that reads 12:23:38 a.m., and the other clock on Mr. O'Keefe's iPhone has a different time, 12:23:59 to 12:24:07. Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty if these two clocks pertain to an event that's happening at the same time or a different time?
Yes. So these two clocks are, we are synchronizing these clocks to an event that is happening at the same time.
This is relative to the first text stream event, the 3-point turn. You said there was a second text stream event that you were analyzing.
Correct. There is a second text stream event.
And what is that second text stream event?
That second text stream event is a backing up maneuver.
Are you familiar with the time frame on the Lexus clock relative to that second text stream event?
Yes, I am.
And what is that time frame?
So it is approximately 19 minutes from the ignition on.
And do you know what time that is on the Lexus clock?
Yes, I do.
With the course permission?
Yes. Yes.
So that is going to be 12:31:43 is going to be the end of that text stream event.
That text stream event, by the way, when it captures data, how long, what window of data does it capture when there's a text stream event or a triggering event?
Sure. So when the trigger occurs, it captures data 5 seconds before and 5 seconds after the trigger.
What if the event is less than 10 seconds?
So if it's less than 10 seconds, it would capture the entire event. If it's more than 10 seconds, it would only capture a partial snapshot of that event.
And so when you talk about the data for the backing event, is that the 10-second window you're speaking of?
Yes, that is that 10-second window.
Does that have anything to do with defining the length of the actual event?
No, it does not.
Okay. When you looked at the time from the Lexus clock regarding that backing event, did you do an analysis of John O'Keefe's phone considering the variance that you identified?
Yes, I did. So I applied the same variance to that second text stream event.
When you apply that variance between the Lexus clock and Mr. O'Keefe's phone, what is the, could I turn to 43, please? What is the time of that event if we're referring to Mr. O'Keefe's phone?
Sure. So that the time of that event with the clock variance adjusted is 12:32:04 to between 12:32:04 and 12:32:12.
And do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the accuracy of that time from Mr. O'Keefe's phone considering the variance?
Yes, I do.
And what is your opinion?
And that the opinion is that the text stream, the second text stream event ends between 12:32:04 and 12:32:12.
Bum, bum, bum.
When you say text stream event, that's the 10-second window?
Yeah. Correct. That's the 10-second window.
Does there that necessarily is. Include the entire event?
No, it does not.
The graph on the bottom, what does that show us? It looks a little bit overwritten.
Yeah, so that graph is a timeline representation of the text stream event ending being adjusted with the 12:32:04 to 12:32:12 in comparison with the last lock event that is recorded by Mr. O'Keefe's phone at 12:32:09.
Your analysis relative to the data that you obtained from the SD card, is your analysis and opinions separate from the other information you looked at that corroborated or supported your analysis?
Yes, they are.
I have no further questions.
There you go. That is the testimony today in the case against Karen Reed. Shannon Burgess, digital forensic analyst. There certainly is more in Cross. I'm not in any way trying to play that down, so please go do watch that, where they go after his LinkedIn profile and many other things. Right now, I'm going to tell you this. I am in an area where we're getting a tornado warning, so I'm going to wrap up the broadcast for the day. We've been about 54 minutes into this, so that's that. We're going to go into our shelter with our pets. But yeah, so a lot to think about there. What can you weigh? Can you weigh, you know, his watch the cross. I encourage you to watch the cross. But also remember the data of what it is, because it's I think it's pretty impactful. What are your thoughts?
I think this, Karen can say whatever she wants. The data says otherwise.
Yeah.
And she may learn something from the data as well. Like, holy shit, that's what happened. I can't remember, but my car knows.
Well, I think she knows it all lines up to. I don't think she knows, but I think the car is telling her, hey, guess what, Karen? Surprise. Your first assumptions were
and it
right.
Happened to have been your boyfriend.
Everything you told your dad, everything you said at the beginning, it was true.
Yeah.
Just because the attorney said it wasn't doesn't mean it's not. So there you go. There's a lot more to come in this case. Press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts. Let us know in the comments what your thoughts are. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.